Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 136 on Tuesday, the 26th of September, 2017. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew. And this week we'll be talking about happy birthday to us, people outraged at TfL for putting their safety first, Devon gets rapid chargers only 4 weeks too late, and great yet disastrous cars. So, Alan, we're 2 years... This is the second year anniversary episode out, and we've decided to do something really special, which is to do exactly what we always do.
Well, yes. I think that actually if you were ever to listen back to the very first ones, and if you want to do that, you can't do it through iTunes, you've got to do it from our site, then you will find that it's evolved quite a bit. Even though I'm in an echoey hotel room in Sweden, you'll find that the audio is so much better now, and I don't know. We go do less and hopefully I use the words basically a lot less, which is my big bugbear when I listen to myself.
Essentially you do. I have to insert the European siren less than we used to.
You do, but that's partly because we now do video as well, and it's very difficult to edit the video and do that, so I try not to swear anymore.
So when you have to do it, then
yeah,
I get exactly it now. That's the only reason. If only we'd known that from the beginning.
No, but 136 episodes. Thank you, everyone who listens. It's always something of a privilege, to be honest. And we've met a whole bunch of you, and you're lovely. To a person, you're absolutely lovely. So thank you.
Absolutely, thank you. Anyway, right.
Should we get on with some news?
Enough of being nice to people.
That's as much follow-up as we have this week, by the way, because we don't actually have any follow-up, which is unusual, but nice. However, the omnipresent Dieselgate makes itself felt in this first story, because the other week, a bunch of wannabe swampies from Greenpeace. I am, yes. They decided to board a car carrying ship around Sheerness in Kent, climb on it and try and, I don't really know what they were trying to do. They were trying to tell people to ditch the diesel.
Volkswagen.
Volkswagen.
This was an attack against Volkswagen, even though they got people's property. This wasn't Volkswagen. Yes. These are ordered cars that had people's names against them, and they went and grabbed all of the keys.
Well, they were trying to take all the keys from them, putting stickers on the engine, and doing all sorts of generally rather silly and quite
pathetic.
Invasive stuff.
Pathetic.
It was really pathetic, yeah. That's what I was trying not to say. And ironically, the ship contained more petrol cars than diesel cars, as well as 37 plug-in hybrids. But hey, who cares about that? Similarly, who cares about the fact that that Volkswagen have announced that they're going to bring out 80, that's 80, okay, new EVs planned by the year 2025. I mean,
well, that was only a week before this, so they were obviously living under their rock in a cave, or wherever it is they don't have electricity or any amenities that the rest of modern society has. So they missed this massive declaration and shouting out about how the Volkswagen want to be a better company than they have been.
Easy for them to have missed that, because Greenpeace were also protesting outside the Frankfurt Motor Show at the unveiling of new fossil fuels, petrol and diesel powered models that were being unveiled there.
Obviously,
which I actually can't name any of them. I'm sorry, I can't name any of them, because everything that I saw was about electric autonomous things.
Quite.
But that's that. The other thing was I know somebody on Twitter did ask Greenpeace how they got there, how these protesters had actually made it to Kent from all across the country, including the Black Isle, north of Inverness in Scotland, all sorts of stuff. Greenpeace replied that it was a variety of petrol, electric and hybrid powered cars, which is rather unusual given given all the pictures of people were taken in from inside a coach, which are almost universally in this country diesel powered.
It goes to show, you see, that last mile is the tricky bit.
It is.
It's what people are worried about, the last mile.
They were asked if they could elaborate on what types of cars it was, but never actually responded to that at all. So yes, lovely, well done, Greenpeace. All you did was really cause a mess by taking lots of keys out of lots of cars. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, you got nothing positive out of that whatsoever, I don't think.
No.
Except for made yourself look silly and as though you're happy to do criminal damage to people's property.
I don't think they really won anyone's favour in that one. Because most people look at that kind of action and say, oh, no, because that's damaging someone's property. That's not on.
Yeah, all I saw
for most folk.
All I saw was scorn, and I did look away from our little corner of Twitter as well. But all I saw was scorn and mockery. So
yeah, it was.
I think the general public have no truck with this, as it were.
That one backfired.
Quite good work. Yes. Good work.
Anyway, Uber have been in the news as ever.
Yes, Uber have had the application for a new license refused by Transport for London.
Mm-hmm.
And if, in case you happen to be like Greenpeace under a rock or in a cave where there is no way of getting any news items at all, you will have missed the fact that this caused outrage. Huge amounts of outrage and huge amounts of distress, to the point where a petition, an online petition, was set up.
Okay. Stop. I'm just going to stop you there. Now, first thing to notice, this is Uber London, so this isn't anywhere outside of London, obviously. The petition was also set up by the by Uber themselves.
Which Uber, though?
Which Uber? Uber London.
You sure it was Uber London and not Uber Netherlands, which I'm going to come on to in a minute about this really excellent article.
I believe it was
because Uber Netherlands are the one who sent the email out to everybody saying, this is outrageous what's happened to us.
Yeah, you say it, because it's far more complicated than I think it's being made out to be generally. It must have been Uber Netherlands because I got the email.
Yeah. Well, first of all, before we go any further, let us explain the reasons why Transport for London turned this down, and they are quite serious, in my opinion.
Yeah, but they are.
Because this has got lost in the hysteria, because people have gone, oh my God, it's going to cost me more to get anywhere, and that's all they've worried about. But why Transport for London, who gave Uber an extra 4 months to address this, by the way, have turned it down, was, first, their approach to reporting serious criminal offences, their approach to how medical certificates are obtained, their approach to how enhanced disclosure and barring service, DBS, checks are obtained, and their approach to explaining the use of Greyball in London, software that could be used to block regulatory bodies from gaining full access to the app and prevent officials from undertaking regulatory or law enforcement duties. Now, of everyone complaining, if they took a deep breath and read those things, I am sure they would say, ooh, hang on, that's not good. And these are all the things that every single taxi company, and that's what Uber is in London, it is a taxi company.
It's nothing more than a minicab firm. Nothing more than a minicab firm.
Everyone has to follow by these rules. And, you know, there's obviously more rules than these, but everyone has to abide by all the rules that are laid out. And they have not dealt with or are not able to deal with these four items in a satisfactory manner for Transport for London. And people seem to have forgotten that Transport for London's job is to make sure people who are being transported are transported safely. That's their number one job. Number one job is safety.
Yes. Sorry, you've pretty much covered that one. Yes, you're completely right. And that's what it is. It's for stuff in the background. It is nothing to do with actually being able to summon a vehicle from an app. It's nothing to do with Uber being there and existing or any of those things. It is purely about safety. Uber, of course, have gone very much on the back foot. Remember that they've had Well, we all
2017 has not been a good year news-wise for Uber, has it? In any stretch of the imagination, smaller companies would have folded long before now.
Absolutely, absolutely. If it wasn't for the huge amount of Goldman Sachs money that's in there, and other investors too, then yes, smaller companies would have folded by now. It's not about the app, any of this stuff. A lot of it is about the culture that has been there within Uber. We've talked about that before. I'm not going to go into it in great detail. But Dara Khosrowshahi, and I hope I've got that correct, the new CEO of Uber, has basically written an open letter in the Evening Standard apologising for the mistakes they have made in the past and the mistakes
The Evening Standard. That's the one that the owner has ploughed a sackload of money into Uber with. Yeah, that Evening Standard.
Quite possibly, but it is a free way of getting it. It is a way of many, many Londoners read it, and it's a good way of getting stuff out there.
Mm-hmm. Because
I'm just saying,
because George, it's the one that George Osborne's the editor for, isn't it?
Yes,
yeah,
editor, yes.
Well, he came out with a statement, and then it was pointed out that the owner of the Evening Standard is a major investor in Uber. So, surprise, surprise, that they have a very positive spin on all this and saying, oh no, you're against the future. And this is what's really annoyed me about all this, is the facts have been ignored or pushed to one side, and it's become about belief, and it's become about people choosing something else to focus on. It's like, oh, you're denying the future if you deny them. But hang on, Uber did not report serious crime incidents, one of which included the time that Metropolitan Police got to find out about it. It was too long before they could then investigate and prosecute anyone, because Uber didn't report that crime.
There's a bunch of stuff like that, and this is one of these things where there was a tweet by Jack Dorsey at Twitter, who was saying about, oh, you know, you're denying this if you're against Tesla, if you're against Uber, if you're against this, and my feeling is actually I'm not. I'm absolutely not. I'm way, you know, is there a new toy, a new tech that I can embrace? Sure, I'll go off and do it. But I love, you know, the idea of being able to get essentially a vehicle across town from an app. I love the electric vehicles, I love all that kind of stuff. I just don't necessarily like the culture of the organizations who are doing it.
No, we are not against advancements. I mean, I know I'm more rabid about this than you are. No, well, I'm not. I'm against bad practices. I'm against bad business. And I'm against it exposing us as the user, the consumer, the client to horrible things. That's what I'm against. And Uber, and there was reports of assaults on passengers by Uber drivers, which wasn't reported. This is another, you know, so all this, let's have some cheap travel. Great. You got a chance of being assaulted. Oh, who cares about that? And don't say you could get that anyway. Yes, you could. But they did not have, according to TfL, the safety guards in place to protect passengers. So
let's see what happens, because, of course, they're going to appeal this. They have 28 days. They'll appeal this probably on the very last day. That gives them 28 days. 21. They have 21 days to appeal. In that window they can still legally operate. So things will be ongoing. It doesn't mean that you can't hail an Uber in London. Let's just see what happens, and but we'll find out, I believe, towards the end of October.
Yep.
This story's not gone.
No, they're not going to lose it overnight. You know, it's not that it stopped yesterday or anything silly like that, which again got lost in the hysteria.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, moving on, because otherwise I'll just have to spend hours being angry as opposed to
minutes. If it makes everybody at home feel better, I've already culled a couple of Andrew's stories, which he was just going to get grumpy and angry about. So.
So I'm working on your episode. It should be happy.
I'm working on your behalf. Why we haven't been for the last 2 years? I don't see where I should start now. Anyway, plug-in hybrid electric vehicles.
Yes, there's a new research has come out claiming that they are in fact not the greenest, but amongst the highest polluting. This is
Keep going then.
This is from TMC, which is the mileage consultancy, who has analysed fuel consumption data on 40 models of hybrid and 7 models of plug-in hybrid.
So you know what they do. So the miles consultancy, they essentially do fleet fuel management. So you know when you're behind people at the petrol station, they've got to give the mileage of their vehicle and their registration plate once they hand over the card. They do that kind of thing. So they're recording real mileage and the real amount of fuel used against the number of miles covered for vehicles on large fleets. Mm.
So what they're trying to say is, or what they feel their data allows them to say, is that, for example, one of the FEVs achieved an average of almost 45 miles per gallon, as opposed to the advertised consumption of 130 miles per gallon. Mm-hmm. The average fuel use is equivalent to CO2 emission of 168 grams per kilometer in real world, in the data they have analyzed. Yes. Now, this obviously made a few manufacturers sit up and go, are you sure? Can we see the data, please? And then listening to them a bit more, it looks like what it is that people do either unintentionally or intentionally are not using a hybrid or plug-in hybrid how it should be used.
Well, absolutely. So this is all about company cars and this is all about fleet cars. So this is where people are either issued a car, a vehicle that they have to take. And as part of that, then of course they get taxed against the benefit in kind. So they can choose, they can choose a number of vehicles, or maybe there's an emphasis on an organization wishing to cut their fuel costs. And they're trying to move to plug-in hybrids. But what's actually happening is rather than people ever plugging them in, they just get them and they just run them. And what they're doing is essentially they don't care about the fuel consumption, really, because it all gets paid by the company. What they care about is their low benefit in kind to themselves, the benefit in kind taxation. Mm-hmm. And what's happening is the drivers of the cars are the only people benefiting. And that's really what the Miles Consultancy was trying to highlight, was the fact that, you know, if you're saying, you know, we want to have a hybrid fleet, a plug-in hybrid fleet, then just be aware that you're doing it for the right reasons. If you don't do it right, it might cost you more.
Yeah.
Because people on company cars don't care about it. I mean, I've met a bunch of people like that. You say, oh, well, how are you getting on with that Outlander, it was in that case. So how are you getting on? Oh, I don't know. I never plug it in. Eh? Why not? Well, I don't need to, do I?
Yeah.
I just run on petrol all the time. And they're getting the low benefit in kind, but they're you know, it's essentially a petrol. In that case, it's essentially a petrol SUV, and they're lugging around a load of batteries. They'd be better off with just having the diesel version, really.
Yeah. Well, the Belgian government has sort of taken quite an aggressive stance against this and decided that these are fake low emission vehicles now.
And, quote unquote.
Yes. And from 2020, plug-in hybrid cars in Belgium will only be granted, and I'm quoting from the Fleet News article here, granted tax relief on a sliding scale linked to their battery storage capacity in relation to the total weight of the vehicle. Now, in the UK, we are not going to be exempt from this because the tax regime from 2010-20 for electric vehicle benefit and kind concessions, this is, for electric vehicles, FEVs and hybrids will be tied to how many miles the car can travel on battery power alone. So the low FEVs of the 20 to 30 mile range will not get the tax benefits they are enjoying now. So another reason for all the manufacturers to be jumping up and down saying 2020, lots of electrification, don't you worry, is possibly because they've seen, or probably because they've seen this coming, amongst other things. You know, I feel a bit sorry for people who understand what the hybrid is or what the plug-in hybrid is about and how it should be used, to maximize the potential that it has. I feel very sorry for them. And I'd suggest that the information coming out from the motoring news side of things has not always been the greatest at explaining it, because it's been new for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we've all got to do a better job of explaining it in simple terms. This is the manufacturers. This is, you know, I just about couch us in this, but motoring reporting, blogging, journalism needs to do a better job at reporting this back out as well in simple terms that the general public can understand. Because the quicker they can understand this, A, the better they will use the vehicles, but B, they will then also be able to select a more appropriate vehicle for their needs.
Well, you and I had a debate earlier on this kind of thing about, are motoring journalists tech journalists these days, or are they tech journalists on a different topic? And this, to an extent, comes into it. You know, the drivetrains nowadays, it's not about talking about 16 valve. Okay, 16, you want more valves, that means you can get more in air and more flow in and out. You know, this is way more complex than that kind of stuff. And the use and the use cases of different types of vehicles are more separated and more complex now.
Yeah, absolutely. But we've all got to step up and improve what we do, because we are tech journalists or tech reporters now. Whether we want to be or not, because of the way cars are going, we have to be, unless you are going to be clever like, I don't know, friend of the show Ian Seabrook, and just stick with older cars.
She's way clever, yeah. Chris, and Chris Pollitt as well, saying exactly the same thing. He's doing exactly the same thing when we met him down in Bristol. Yeah, absolutely. I agree completely.
Right, let's move on. Instead of telling car journalists how they should be reporting things.
Yeah, let's run away from that one as quickly as we possibly can. So it's not just the car manufacturers who are getting a little bit nervous about what's going to happen. What's going to happen as electrification comes along, particularly you said 2020 there. Mm-hmm. We've got, of course, 2030. I've got the right date. Yeah, 2030 and stuff have all been mentioned recently.
2040.
Thank you. I thought
2030 was Scotland anyway.
Oh, it is. Yes,
it's we. I thought Saint Nicola had, she had mentioned that. So
yes, she had. Yes, 2030 for Scotland. Because hey, whatever Westminster's doing isn't good enough.
We'll do it better.
We'll do it better. We'll do it with less consideration, less time, and less organisation.
Allegedly.
allegedly, yes. So anyway, traditionally oil companies and petrol companies are, of course, set to have a whole new challenge when it comes to their retail organisations and exactly what they're going to do and how they're going to evolve what's currently known as a petrol station. And Shell have announced that, well, they're planning their very first no petrol station as a concept and to see how this is going to work. I almost said going forward in at least the near to medium future. So their aim is to have a site somewhere in central London which has biofuels, whichever flavours of biofuels they may be, EV charging and hydrogen available as well.
That's the one I liked a lot. I liked to see that they were putting the hydrogen there as well. I mean, I don't know about the safety side of things, but I really liked the idea of someone going, yes, we're going to install hydrogen. Refilling, charging, whatever the technical term is, I don't know, you know better than I do.
With hydrogen stations, everybody goes, ooh, and they have images of, you know, oh, the humanity and all this kind of stuff, and I'm trying not to use the word Hindenburg in there when it comes to hydrogen stations. Really, once you've actually filled up a vehicle with hydrogen, you think there are so many checks, balances in here that it really is taking the risk out of it, and it's really not such a big issue. Storage, bit of a pain because it all has to be pressurized, but hey, it's developed already. And speaking of which, Shell is expected to open three hydrogen stations somewhere across the country. I have no idea that this article in the Telegraph doesn't actually say.
Well, if they can dot them roughly where year. I would like to go on holiday, that would be ace. So then I can I can go, oh, maybe we can get a hydrogen car.
I'm wondering how soon, totally the wrong reasons, I'm wondering how soon it'll be possible to do Land's End to Johnny Broke's by hydrogen. And back again, of course. Back again being important.
Could we do the Edge of Wales?
You're doing a donkey, maybe. Not all the way to do the Edge of Wales in an alternative fuel vehicle right at the minute. Hay is an alternative fuel vehicle.
But this idea of the no petrol station. Finish, and then I'll chip in.
I was also going to say what they're going to do is of course, whilst people are spending the half hour it takes to charge a car rather than standing around chatting to other people who are also charging their cars like we might have done in the past, then the idea is to present the service stations as a retail destination, which was the original aim of motorway service stations, really, providing good quality food and coffee alongside high-speed Wi-Fi. Good luck.
But when we drove round, we came to the conclusion, didn't we, that if Starbucks or someone like that could get a march on all these... and before we go any further, by the way, we would like it to be known that we are available for consultancy. But before... our rates are not outrageous, don't worry. And our ideas are very good. But if... As we were driving around, you see nowadays there's these Starbucks are cropping up all over the place, particularly in old Little Chefs and things like that, which is just a nice breakup of a journey where people can meet, because so many people, more people now are freelancing or working from home, and they want to meet somewhere and all the rest of it, or just get out of the house, or they're actually on a journey as well. And if you put electric charging points, people will make a beeline to it, because that's one of the big takeouts from when we drove around, is we made beeline for places because it had a charger. When we did our route was, this is the general area we want to go to. Now, where can we go to? Oh, okay, we can stop up there, which doesn't take us miles out of the way of there. And
is that how we planned the route?
Yes. As I drove, you did that. But that is the general concept behind it, isn't it? Is you look on the map, I want to go to, for the sake of argument, Land's End. Is it possible? Apparently it was. No, it wasn't. But, you know, on paper, it was. So that's why we ended up in that particular hotel that night.
It's true, yes. Yes, because it had a charge. Oh, no, it
didn't.
Yeah. But, yes, it
so is. So if you, I mean, particularly as we're talking, if you're talking half-hour charges, 45-minute charges, that's a coffee break, isn't it? Particularly if you're going to meet someone as well. So, you know, Starbucks or Costa or whoever, you know, coffee people or small break people.
But you see that happening, and you see people already doing that. I mean, there's if you look at, and I know that I keep going on about Chargemaster, but it's because they're the ones doing it, not for any other reason, really. Is that they are, that, you know, they're trying to have an ultra charger at every exit, and they're trying to put them at hotels. Places that already have,
and there was
beverage serving facilities.
The pub that we went to that hadn't even marked the bays. It was so new.
Yeah.
And that's a brilliant idea. You go in, I'll have a meal. An hour later, my car is absolutely chock full. Let's go on.
It's brilliant. Coffee.
And it's brilliant because you're not necessarily having to do the service station stuff where you are trapped. Like we are with petrol now, that it's 15 to 20p per litre more. Just because you happen to be on the motor when they say, oh, well, you've got freedom of choice. We've put the prices next to the motor.
The electric chargers by the motorway, because of their high connection fee, were the most expensive we used.
Mm.
For exactly that reason. Exactly the same reason that petrol is more expensive. Anyway, it's all this kind of stuff. And the fact that actually a traditional fuel company isn't involved and isn't needed anymore.
Yeah.
Won't be needed anymore is exactly why Shell have been working on this kind of concept station. Related to that, it's been announced that Devon is going to get 6 new rapid chargers.
Now, that doesn't sound a lot, right? If you're not up to date with this sort of stuff, if you haven't listened to us as we did our mini episodes for Charging Around Britain, but 6 in the space of Devon means you have, if you just want to travel around Devon and a big chunk of Cornwall, and that's it, you are absolutely covered. And as far as charging points and electric car, you don't need to worry.
You're going to be, well, unless you drive a Nissan Leaf, a Renault Zoe, or a Tesla.
You couldn't be worried if you happen to drive 3 times.
Now, well, I don't know.
Why is that?
Because they only do DC. They don't do CHAdeMO charging on these ones. Supposedly, InstaVolt and Mid Devon District Council did a lot of research, comprehensive research, and
didn't select the best selling electric car in the country.
Actually, the AC charging was unnecessary, so they're DC only. So they're CCS and Type 2. So unless you have...
Is there an adapter, is there, then, that you get with your Leaf and Zoe, or do you have to buy it?
I believe it's an extra. But yeah, so that's... the Zoe Leaf...
Does that affect the charging time, then, with the adapter?
Probably it will do, because it'll make it less efficient in some way, shape, or form. Please don't ask me any more technical questions.
Okay.
So it turns out that's the case with those. So... Yes, it's great. Loads more for many of us, people with i3s, with Ionics, with vehicles like that, which have those, which are DC. But if you're AC and if you're the best-selling cars, electric vehicles in the country, and the most numerous on the roads, then it's not really going to help you that much.
But I am delighted that the Southwest are getting them, because...
But they already have more chargers anyway.
Yeah. Yes, that's true. But I am delighted the Southwest is getting that, because I was absolutely gutted when we couldn't explore everywhere that I wanted to take us, because they just didn't have the capability. So hopefully it rolls out more and more. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, when I was down in the Southwest over the summer, I noticed a lot of electric vehicles anyway. Yeah. I was surprised at the number. I know it was more than the year before. And I think it's just going to get bigger and bigger. I'm going to bang on a bit about stuff we've already said, but it makes so much sense for so many people, but they just don't know.
Yes, exactly. I think you're quite right. So, but anyway, new, more rapid chargers, always a good thing. What a shame. It doesn't cover everything.
Yep.
Anyway. Gosh, this is hard going tonight, isn't it? But this is that point in the show when I remind you about our Patreon, the way you can support the Motoring Podcast by donating a small amount of money every month. If you'd like to know more, then head to motoringpodcast.com and click on the orange Become a Patron button on the front page. We're aiming for at least one new patron every month, and we managed it for this month. But don't let that stop you. Don't let that stop you at all. You can go ahead and be a patron for October already. If you're already a patron, then thank you very, very much. But we understand that not everyone has the ability to spare us a small amount of their income every month. So please don't forget to like, rate, and leave feedback on the Motoring Podcast and a review via the podcast player of your choice.
Now, look, I know we've done a bit of our happy birthday and thank yous earlier, but seriously, a big thank you for supporting us over the last 2 years in terms of iTunes reviews, in terms of telling other people, in terms of tweeting it out, in terms of passing it around on Facebook, in terms of the monetary support you've given us. We have been honestly blown away by it, because it's tricky to gauge reaction sometimes when I'm talking to Alan and he's just in another random Scandinavian hotel. You don't know exactly how people are reacting to it. So for people to have been as supportive as they have, to the point where they take that extra step, has been really, really amazing. And we do gush and you know, thank as, you a lot.
Yeah, Andrew does, yes, yes. The iTunes reviews are really important because they do push us up the numbers and they make us say that we're normally in the top 20 of iTunes Automotive. And even stuff as silly as noticing the double entendres that Andrew maybe hasn't is yes. Thank you.
Right, carry on. Still news.
Right, yes, news, enough of that. This is today's big news is up next. So, a man with a company that does lots of stuff with blowing hot and cold air declared that his company, the company mostly perceived as being his, is developing solid-state batteries, which is good. And once they've developed the batteries and worked out how to actually make them commercially, then they're actually going to make a car, because they've been looking at making a car. They're not really sure where the car is going to be made, because they're not really sure where the batteries are going to be made, but they know they're going to be developing the batteries somewhere in the southwest, and that it should probably come out in 2020, provided the battery tech has made it there. That's all anyone actually knows about the Dyson car, okay? So there's lots and lots of people talking about lots and lots of things, and lots of things are being flaunted. Nobody really knows much other than solid cell batteries being developed in the Southwest on a former airfield. That's it, okay? It's everywhere. It's going to be all over the papers tomorrow by the time that this comes out. It's going to be all over the motoring press next week. Nobody knows anything. Remember...
Or if it'll happen.
There is no certainty. They're working on something. It's dependent on that battery tech, which they haven't commercialized yet. Remember that Dyson themselves, not wonderfully successful once they go away from blowing air. Okay, so we're all familiar with hand dryers. We're all familiar with hair dryers. Fans, heaters, that kind of stuff. Stuff like the washing machine was an absolute disaster because they tried to be too clever and what it did was shred your clothes. It was also too big for most people's kitchens.
Vacuum hasn't been exactly fantastic either.
Oh, the vacuum was number one. Well, yeah, vacuum.
They've sold well. Has been developed. How well they work is a different point.
Yes, quite. Dyson's only previous venture into transport that I'm aware of was the Ball Barrow in the 1970s.
How was that theirs?
And that was James Dyson.
Oh, yeah. Right, I never knew
that. That's the first one. That was his first kind of one. It collapsed. Just bear that all of that in mind.
That the ex-Tesla communication executive Ricardo Reyes now works there.
Yeah, so lots of. I mean, they must be very pleased. Everybody knows the story. Let's just be reasonable about it and look at it in the context of what's actually been announced, which is very, very little.
This story just hits me the same as last week's Land Rover, but not a Land Rover Defender.
You are not the first person I've heard to even use the words vanity project on this one. We'll see what happens. No confirmation. Apple couldn't make it work. Dyson has a habit of being overly clever. And I know that they hire good people. They didn't hire me. I'm bitter and twisted at one point, but they did hire a lot
their
of people.
Their loss, our gain, of course.
In the grand scheme of things, not really.
Thanks very much.
It's definitely, I don't feel it's my loss. There we go. Just remember that about the Dyson stuff. It's going to be all over the place. They know it's very low.
Right, let's move on. This is an article that Len Bingley... tweeted out today on greenmotor.co.uk, which I think is excellent and worth your time of 5 minutes to read it. And this is with Dr. Eric Kohling. If I've pronounced that wrong, I'm really sorry. Normally I give tricky sounding names to Alan to do, but today I put this on myself.
And this is good because I haven't actually got around to reading this yet.
So. Yeah, and he's he's a technology advisor and vice president at Zenuity. And they've got a joint venture with Volvo and Autoliv to make or to work on autonomous vehicles and researching autonomous stuff. Now, as everyone knows, I'm not quite as enthusiastically optimistic about how quick these are going to come in, or if they are going to come in sooner than, say, 20 or 30 years, they are in very narrow parameters that autonomous vehicles will be on the roads and where they'll be used. And it was really interesting to read this article because that's essentially what Dr. Kohling's saying, that he feels that they will be used in very specific environments, particularly to start with. He said there's not going to be a mass adoption, sort of like there's going to be a switch flicked and everyone can buy an autonomous vehicle that will drive anywhere and do anything you need at all times. No, that's not going to happen. It has to progress. So this is an excellent article. The questions are really good from Lem as well. So I thoroughly encourage you to read this article. Links, as ever, in the show notes.
A Lem and Green Motor are always good people and interesting people to follow anyhow.
Yep.
We kind of recommend those on our reading list. This is definitely your one if you've got, you know, your five to 10 minute reading over lunchtime. There's videos and everything in there too. So this is our sort of long form recommendation for this week, really.
Yep.
Cool. That brings us to this week's list of the week. And this week's list of the week is from Autocar again. They've been doing a cracking set of lists lately.
To the point where I'm suspicious they are listening to us and they wish to make sure. They wish to try and out Major Gav, Major Gav.
Well, yes, that's kind of the feeling I'm getting. But this week's list is great cars that were also disasters. Now, some of them, it depends on how you gauge a disaster.
Yes.
But again,
I think this is disaster in terms of sales more than anything.
I think so, yeah. So, I mean, there's lots of good stuff in there. There's everything from the Bricklin SV1 to the Audi A2.
I love the A2.
I
just
A2.
Think it's such a clever piece of package. They look great now.
They do. I would guess.
There's a C6 in here, and somehow Autocar have picked the worst colour to have put a C6 in for the photograph.
You don't buy a Citroen like that in red.
No, you don't.
It's. I mean, I agree that there's some crackers in there. Honda CRZ. I'm NSU RO80. What a fantastic car that was. Brilliant. Loads of stuff in there. There's maybe 20.
The Rancho. Rancho is in there.
I see the Ranchos in there. I was leaving that as a special surprise for people when they started going.
Well, I can't. I can't. If I see a Rancho, I have to say it.
So anyway, that's our list of the week. That's our list of the week.
Yes. Go and have a look and do enjoy.
Yes.
It is a good list. It is a good list. And made me slightly sad looking at some of them, going, yeah, wish there was more of those.
Yes, me too. The Vauxhall Ampera.
Yes. Even though we've got two in our town, amazingly. I think we have, we must have 80% of the UK's Amperas in our, and then there's one in Stamford, isn't there?
Well, there is, yes. Yes, it's one distance out of Stamford. Have you seen the residuals on those, though? They're still £6,000-£8,000.
Really?
I know they were expensive to start with. Yeah, yeah. They seem to be holding their value really well because I was having.
It's got to be a scarcity thing.
I was partly, yeah, but also they're really good.
Okay.
And people who bought them seem to have kept them.
Well, I know if you drive them, if you know how to drive it, as we found, if you know how to drive these things, you're amazed at what you can actually get out of them.
Yeah. Well, people are getting 130 miles to the gallon and stuff out of them without, you know, having to try, really. So, no, they're particularly good.
Excellent.
Anyway, that's getting in the way of our own final.
Yes, and finally, Sir Hoonigan of Block has come out with his latest insane and crazy video of insane and crazy driving. This time it's drifting up Pike's Peak, which got a little twitchy in a few places.
Yeah, it's a climb Kana is what he's describing it as. It's not straight up. It's not climb dance.
No.
It's not even an attempt to replace climb dance.
No, it is. There is some excellent driving. There's a little bit of dodging round things, but Pike's Peak Road doesn't offer that much space to do that, really. But there is lots of tyre smoke and insane amounts of fantastic noise and flames. It's just glorious. I always marvel at the video footage that they get, whether it's from in the cabin with the GoPros or whether it's on the outside of the car or whether it's the strategic points that they stick camera people with, hoping, please get this right as you come around this corner.
Well, yeah, it's not a one take job. You can see where maybe it's taken a few, and some of the helicopter footage I always think is fantastic as well.
So if you like that sort of stuff, then the link is again in the show notes for that.
And because I can't resist any chance to remind people about how wonderful Ari Vatanen is in a Peugeot 405 T16, I've actually sneaked the link to climb dance.
When he was blind virtually most of the way up that because of the sun.
Yes, the sun and the dust. There's a link. I put a link to climb dance in, certainly in our version of the notes.
I'll make sure they're in the notes then.
So hopefully I'm going. Because it's only 5 minutes, but it's five wonderful, wonderful minutes that we should remind ourselves of. It's just fabulous stuff. Which is not to talk down Ken Block in any way, shape, or form either.
But his was more of a homage to than trying to replicate.
I think that can't work out if there was a bit where he holds his hand up to shield.
Yeah, he did.
To shield did. From the sun. And I think it's exactly the same spot because I watched this Ken Block one and I thought, oh, I haven't watched Climb Dance for ages. So whilst I was I'd got to the end of doing my notes for tonight, I sat there and I watched Climb Dance as well. So yeah, a nice pairing anyway. There's worse ways to fill 15 minutes of your time.
Exactly.
Than that. Exactly.
Right, I think that's us done. Do we have any parish notes?
I think it is. No.
Well, the only one I'd say is Rearview has not disappeared, by the way, everyone. I am just trying to organise calendars to work both sides of me and guests and things. So as soon as it's back, I will be screaming about it and let you know that it's coming. And I am working very hard to make sure that it is back because I enjoy it and I know the people who listen really enjoy it as well and I don't want to disappoint you.
Sometimes the people who are on even say that they enjoy it. I'm still catching up. I actually still didn't quite get enough time on the plane to finish off listening to Jade Wales of Subaru and Isuzu UK today. But Jade's absolutely lovely, but I'm intrigued at her background. I really didn't realise just what her background was. So again, if you've missed ones, this is a great chance for you to actually catch up and be like me and be better than me.
Yeah, my colleague, yes.
Do you know what? It's hard in the summer because it's you can't hear the voices properly with the roof down the car.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's why you should. That's why I'm against soft tops.
So anyway, so there won't be that, but there are a couple of special editions on
there. There are. We released yesterday the Subaru Outback compilation where we stitched together all of the updates that we have put, plus a final summary and a summary of a summary.
It's only about 4 hours long, everyone.
I didn't realise. It was ridiculous. It's
and I completely forgot to pre-warn the patrons.
Yeah, 40-odd minutes. But we do cover a lot of ground in it, I think. I don't think we leave any stones unturned, to be honest.
So there's another
Friday.
I know we've got others. Another one on Friday. Is it Subaru again?
No, or
is
it the other one.
It's the other one. Okay, so there's another one coming out on Friday. I shall endeavour to remind everyone at the time.
Yep.
About that. So that pretty much does it for this week, I think. So, as ever, don't forget that between now and next week, you can give us any feedback and just share your thoughts with the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and Instagram. And I have a bunch of Paris photos to come on Instagram at some point once devices synchronize and stuff this week. You can also follow us on Facebook and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, which is the hub of all our activities. Please don't forget our Patreon, available at motoringpodcast.com/support, and reviews and ratings on iTunes and any other podcast players really, really do matter. Andrew, how can people find you in between times?
The best way to find me is on Twitter. If you search for Crack Windscreen, you will find me there standing on the back of said Outback bumper, not the actual one, but a different one. And Alan, if people want...
It is an actual Outback bumper, by the way.
Yes, it is.
Just in case that didn't make sense.
And if people want to wish you congratulations on 2 years of putting up with me, Alan, what is the best way for them to get in touch with you personally?
Twitter, as ever, at AJP Bradley, would work an absolute treat. Much like these noise-cancelling headphones, also work an absolute treat on Andrew.
Thank you.
No bother, mate. provided he doesn't strop off after we finish recording, we'll be back next week. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.